study of Bible doctrine. We have been looking at different subjects of teaching as presented in the Scripture as a whole. And we have come to the last subject of teaching that we are looking at, and that is eschatology, the study of the future of the end times. And so this is message number 71 in the overall series that we are in. The title of this message is The Story of Earth. And we're going to be starting here, Genesis chapter 1, verses 9 to 13. And God said, "Let the waters under the heaven be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, and herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the third day. In a televised interview on October 22, 2007, Democratic Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, spoke of using her public office and particular bills in Congress for the preservation of the planet, among other things that she spoke about. She expressed concern for having a clean environment and so that our children do not inherit a deteriorating planet, as she said. Later in that interview, she gave a quote that was supposedly from the Bible. She said, "In the Old Testament, Isaiah says, 'To minister to the needs of God's creation is an act of worship. To ignore those needs is to dishonor the God who made us.'" Now, in an official statement that was released from her office 6 months later, on the day before Earth Day, that was April 22, 2008, she repeated this statement as grounds for seeking to preserve God's creation, our planet, for generations to come. Her brief statement focused on the threat of climate change and the need to reduce greenhouse gases. And she ended her statement this way: "The Bible tells us in the Old Testament to minister to the needs of God's creation is an act of worship. To ignore those needs is to dishonor the God who made us. On this Earth Day and every day, let us honor the earth and our future generations with a commitment to fight climate change." Now, there was a lot of debate after the statements that she made. Many of her critics were quick to point out that the Bible nowhere says what she supposedly quoted from it. It doesn't say that in Isaiah, doesn't say that in the Old Testament, doesn't say it in the New Testament either. Her defenders responded by saying, well, she was simply summarizing what she believed the Bible to be teaching on the subject of the stewardship, the management of the earth. And that debate went on for a while. I doubt that it was ever resolved before everyone was on to something else, whatever the next thing was at the time. Now, I cannot speak to what was in Nancy Pelosi's mind concerning what the Bible says about the earth, but I can confirm that the Bible has quite a bit to say about the earth, about its past, about its present, and about its future. And the earth is one of the threads of the Bible's big story that runs from the beginning to the end and finds resolution. And that's what this message is, in fact, about. Now, in an earlier message, we started our study of what the Bible teaches about the future by considering the Bible's big story, that major overarching story that the Bible is telling from beginning to end, Genesis to Revelation. And we noted five major story threads that begin in Genesis and are resolved in the end of the Bible, particularly in Revelation. Those threads being God, the heavens, spirit beings, the earth, and mankind. Now, the last message was the story thread of the spirit beings. These are created beings that are non-human and sometimes called angels in the Bible, though they do have other names as well. And of course, among the angels or those created spirit beings They are divided into holy angels and evil angels, which are also known as demons or devils. And the spirit beings will experience changes in the future, but not redemption as other aspects of the creation will. In fact, holy angels have never sinned, and so they have no need of redemption or renewal. Evil angels have sinned, but there is no redemption for them, only a future everlasting judgment that they will come into. Now, in that message, we came to this statement concerning that thread of the story. The story of the spirit beings is the account of special non-human beings God created to inhabit His creation and serve Him. Though some sinned and face eternal condemnation, the elect angels will never fall and will continue in eternity as they are. Well, our text here in Genesis chapter 1, verses 9 to 13, speaks of the origin of the earth in the creation week. And the earth in particular consists of what we see here, the dry land and the seas. But it also includes the non-human parts of the creation. So if we pick up in verse number 20. And God said, let the waters, and this is the waters of the earth, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. And God created great whales and every living creature that moveth, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the seas and let fowl multiply in the earth. And the evening and the morning were the fifth day. And God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind and cattle after their kind and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. So here we see the plant and the animal life upon the earth, things that are in the seas, things that are on the land, things that fly in the air above the earth, in the earth's atmosphere. Now, if the story thread of the earth is like the others, then we should expect to find the earth in its past, present, and future in the Bible as we go from beginning to ending. And that indeed is, in fact, what we do find. So we want to look at the story of the earth, particularly in two parts here this morning. First of all, the origin and the present state of the earth. And then secondly, the future renewal of the earth. So we will begin with the origin and the present state of the earth. And you will notice in verse 31 here in Genesis 1, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. So the original creation state of the earth was pronounced to be very good, and pronounced that to be that by God. God made the earth with purpose. In fact, Isaiah wrote in Isaiah chapter 45 and verse number 18, for thus saith the Lord that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it. He hath established it. He created it not in vain. He formed it to be inhabited. I am the Lord and there is none else. So God created the earth, and he created the earth to be the home, the dwelling place of all different forms of life. That includes the plant and animal life. It also includes human life, but that's human life is not what we're looking at in this particular message. But he did put man on the earth to manage it and to keep it. So in verses 26 through 30 here in Genesis chapter 1, and God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to every thing that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. So God created the man in his own image, and he put him in the garden there to work the creation, to subdue the creation, to have dominion over the creation. In other words, to be a steward and to be a manager of this good creation that God had made. And what we see as we go from there into Genesis chapter number 2, where we find Adam naming the animals and all of that, is that this original creation was made very good. The earth, the sea, all of these things, very good. And there was a harmonious state amongst all the life that was on the earth. But that harmonious state did not continue. Man's sin in the garden in Genesis chapter 3 brought the earth, that dry land and seas and all the plant and animal life therein, under a curse. Genesis chapter 3 verses 17 to 18. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. So we see here that the curse affected the earth, affected its plant and animal life, putting them out of harmony with each other and with human beings, as was the original state of the creation. Now, Paul described this curse on the earth in Romans chapter number 8. He described this curse on the earth as being a bondage and a vanity or a futility. Romans chapter 8, verses 19 to 22. For the earnest expectation of the creature, and that the word for creature there means creation. And as you study this in context, you understand that Paul is talking about the non-human creation of the earth here in these verses. That's what he means when he says creature. Waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God. For the creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who hath subjected the same in hope. Because the creature itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. So Paul referred to this disharmony. Paul referred to this futility of the earth, and that is actually highlighted in the very next chapter of Genesis. Chapter number 4 of Genesis begins hopeful as Adam and Eve name their son Cain, and they anticipate the fulfillment of Genesis 3:15 as Eve says there, I've gotten a man from the Lord. Of course, Genesis 3:15 was the promised seed, the one who would be given, who would be born of the woman, and who would restore creation and reverse the curse. Now, I know that upon reading Genesis 3:15, in fact, we can look at that verse in Genesis 3:15, and I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. That's the statement of the curse that was given to the serpent there in Genesis chapter 3:15. But it's the promise of a seed born of a woman that is going to crush the serpent, that's going to reverse the curse. Now, as we look at Genesis 3:15 alone and isolated, it may not seem to be saying all of that, but it is clearly intended, as we find out later. In fact, in Genesis chapter 5, verses 28 and 29, and Lamech lived 182 years and begat a son. And he called his name Noah, saying, this same shall comfort us concerning our work and toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord hath cursed. So clearly, as you go forward in Genesis, you can see that there's an expectation of this seed that is to be born of the woman. So this promised seed would be a savior for men. It would crush the serpent that the man was at enmity with and at war with. The promised seed would be a savior for men and women. But also, according to what Lamech is saying, his expectation at the birth of a son, Noah, this promised seed would also heal the land. He spoke of the work and the toil of our hands because of the curse that was on the ground and being given rest from that curse. So, we think back to Genesis chapter 4 and how that Adam and Eve had this son Cain and how they had an expectation that this would be the promised seed that would reverse the curse and restore the creation to its original state, so to speak. But rather than Cain being a savior of man and healing the earth, Cain kills man. He kills his brother Abel, and he defiles the earth. We read there in Genesis chapter 4, in verse number 10, God speaking to Cain, he said, "What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground." So the bondage of corruption and the vanity or the futility of the earth that Paul wrote about refers to both the curse that is upon the earth as well as the defilement of the earth through sin. So the eager anticipation that Paul spoke about is for renewal. It is an anticipation for renewal. It's anticipation for the cleansing from the pollution of sin that has thoroughly corrupted the whole creation, the whole earth. In fact, the defilement of the earth was the reason God sent the flood in Noah's day. In Genesis chapter 6, verses 11 to 13, "The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, The end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth." So God spoke to Noah there in Genesis 6, and this would have been, I believe, somewhere around 1600 years after the original creation. God spoke to Noah about how that the earth was filled with violence and that the men and women on the earth had imaginations that were only evil continually and that they had defiled the land. And because of it, God was going to destroy the earth and all living things on the earth. But even in this judgment, God would indicate a future hope. Not just for man, but for the earth and non-human life on the earth. As you go down in Genesis 6 to verses 11 to 13. "The earth also was corrupt before God." That's not the right passage. Here in Genesis chapter number 6, in verse number 18. "But with thee will I establish my covenant, and thou shalt come into the ark, thou and thy sons, and thy wife and thy sons' wives with thee. And of every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort shalt thou bring into the ark." And notice this, "to keep them alive with thee. They shall be male and female. Of fowls after their kind, and of cattle after their kind, of every creeping thing on the earth after his kind, two of every sort shall come unto thee to keep them alive. And take thou unto thee of all food that is eaten, and thou shalt gather it to thee, and it shall be for food for thee and for them. And thus did Noah, according to all that God had commanded him, so did he." So God makes this covenant with Noah, where he says that he's going to spare this animal life. He's going to keep them alive by bringing them according to his instruction in the ark, by providing for their food and providing for, obviously, things to be planted after that. The water was rescinded off of the earth and such. So even in this judgment where God said he was going to destroy the earth and life upon the earth because it had become so defiled through their sin, he also speaks of preserving this earth and life on it and the hope that it had in the future. So the present state of the earth is under a curse and being defiled thoroughly by sin. Again, the blood that cried from the ground, of the blood of Abel that cried from the ground, has not yet been avenged. So there's a disharmony between the different kinds of life on the earth. But this is not the final state of the earth. There is a future renewal of the earth that is prophesied in the Bible. And that is our second part, the future renewal of the earth. So the earth has continued as it was since the flood that was over 4,000 years ago. And Paul described the earth as groaning and travailing in pain, which is the language that is often used of future expectation and anticipation with present distress. In fact, it is oftentimes the language that is associated with the pains of childbirth and how that labor begins and the pain that comes with it that intensifies and reaches up to that climax point to which the child is born, and then that's the big event, and then afterward that begins to reside and so on. So this is the language that is used of the earth, and in fact it's the language of bondage and redemption. Is the very same language that was used of the children of Israel as they were in Egypt in bondage and groaning and travailing under that bondage and then being redeemed to be set free from Egypt and to be brought out. So the very same thing is said about the earth and what Paul is writing there in Romans chapter number 8, that the present state is groaning and travailing in pain together until now. But there is hope. It's subjected to this futility, but not without hope for future redemption that is tied, obviously, to the redemption of man, which, again, is not what we're talking about in this particular message. Now, despite the fact that Paul could describe the earth as groaning together in pain, the earth is headed for a renewal, but it's also headed for a time of tribulation before that renewal, in which that pain and anguish and groaning of the creation will be even worse than what it is in its present state before it is ever better. Jesus described that time as a concentrated time that was unlike any time since the creation or any time that ever will be again. So what Paul describes in Romans 8 is a present state, a continuing state of the earth. The earth has been put under the curse. The earth has been defiled by sin. The earth has been brought into the bondage of corruption. And because of that, it's groaning and travailing all that time until now and continues until this future time that Jesus spoke about. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 24, verses 21 to 22, "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened." So Jesus is talking about a time that is going to be experienced by this world that is unlike any time that has been since the creation of the earth. And it's a time that's unlike anything that will come after it or come again. In other words, it is a unique time in the history and the story of this earth that God has created. And if it wasn't a brief measured time, and that's what Jesus is saying there about those days being shortened. In other words, it's a determined time. It's not a prolonged time. It's not a time that's going to go on for millennia. It's not a time that's going to go on for ages. If this kind of tribulation that is coming were to be upon the earth for an extended period of time, Jesus says there would no flesh would be saved. The whole earth and all life on it would be entirely consumed and would be entirely destroyed. But it is a measured time. It is, as he says, a shortened time. And in fact, it's a time of 7 years in this particular case. And if it were not so, there would be none that would survive it. This is what is referred to as Daniel's 70th week, a time of tribulation that is to try the whole earth. Now, this time of tribulation is divided into two halves, with the second half being what is referred to usually as the Great Tribulation or the time of Jacob's trouble, according to Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse number 7. And this second half of the tribulation is the time when the tribulation judgments will sharply increase in their frequency and in their severity from the first 3.5 years. So we are told about a number of things that the earth is going to experience, and some of the prophets, even in the New Testament, speak of it as a shaking of the earth, so that things that remain will remain and things that cannot remain will not remain. But what is going to happen to the earth is described in leading up to this great tribulation time at the second half. Matthew 24:7, in fact, Jesus said, "For nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places." Now, as you go on reading, he's going to say that these are the beginning of sorrows. In other words, this is the early time of the tribulation, that these things are going to begin to happen. Now, some would say, well, you know, we have earthquakes today. We have nations against nations today. We have famines and diseases and these sort of things that take place today. And yes, we do. And that is a part of the groaning of the creation that Paul described in Romans chapter number 8. But remember that Jesus is now describing a time that's unlike any other time, where these things are going to be greater than anything the earth has experienced to this point. In Revelation chapter 6, which would be during this time of the tribulation, verses 7 and 8, "And when he had opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast say, 'Come and see.' And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword, and with hunger, and with death, and with the beasts of the earth." In other words, a time in which over a fourth part of the earth, there will be the sword, nation against nation, wars, the rumors of wars. There will be hunger. There will be famines unlike anything this world has known to this point. There will be death, these pestilences, these diseases and outbreaks. And there will be death from the beasts of the earth being attacked and killed by these various beasts on the earth. We go on reading there in Revelation chapter 6, verses 12 to 17. "And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together. And every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And the kings of the earth and the great men and the rich men and the chief captains and the mighty men and every bondman and every freeman hid themselves in the dens in the rocks of the mountain and said to the mountains and rocks, 'Fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand?'" You notice how that as these judgments are coming upon the earth in a time unlike any other that this earth has experienced, notice that description of unbelievers. They are seeking to hide themselves, it says, in rocks, in mountains, in caves, saying, "Hide us from the face of the Lamb, for the day of God's wrath has come." In other words, these judgments will be of such that those that live upon the earth, though unbelievers, will acknowledge that this is the work of God, that this has come from God, the upheavals that the earth will be experiencing. We go on in Revelation chapter number 8, verses 7 to 13. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of the trees was burnt up, and all the green grass was burnt up. And the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. And a third part of the sea became blood, and a third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. And a third part of the ships were destroyed. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp. And it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters, and the name of the star is called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. And the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and a third part of the stars, so as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for the third part of it, and the night likewise. And I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels which are yet to sound." And these, again, in that earlier part of the tribulation time, these judgments coming upon the earth and these major convulsions of the earth that are happening in the water supply and the trees, the vegetation, the plant life and the animal life upon the earth, all these things being affected. And these judgments, just as Jesus said, these are only the beginnings of sorrows. These judgments will get worse as that time goes on. So as you go on in that tribulation, Revelation chapter 16, verses 1 to 12. "And I heard a great voice out of the temple saying to the seven angels, 'Go your ways and pour out the vials of the wrath of God upon the earth.' And the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth. And there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast and upon them which worshipped his image. And the second angel poured out his vial upon the sea, and it became as the blood of a dead man, and every living soul died in the sea. And the third angel poured out his vial upon the rivers and fountains of waters, and they became blood. And I heard the angel of the waters say, 'Thou art righteous, O Lord, which art and wast and shalt be, because thou hast judged thus. For they have shed the blood of saints and prophets, and thou hast given them blood to drink, for they are worthy.' And I heard another out of the altar say, 'Even so, Lord God Almighty, true and righteous are thy judgments.' And the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and the power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. And men were scorched with great heat, and blasphemed the name of God which hath power over these plagues, and they repented not to give him glory. And the fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast, and his kingdom was full of darkness. And they gnawed their tongues for pain, and blasphemed the God of heaven because of their pains and their sores, and repented not of their deeds. And the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared." Going on down, Revelation chapter 16, verses 17 to 21. "And the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne, saying, 'It is done.' And there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. And great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. And men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, and for the plague thereof was exceeding great." And all these judgments that we read about coming upon the earth, and the violence and the convulsions, the quaking and shaking of the earth, and again what happens to the waters and the vegetation and the animal life. All these judgments then culminate in the coming of Jesus Christ to the earth, and with his coming, the renewal of the earth. And this is anticipated in many places in the Old Testament. this renewal of the creation, the reversing of the curse and the cleansing of the earth, so that that harmony is seen again in the creation. Psalm 65, verses 9 to 13. Thou visitest the earth and waterest it. Thou greatly enrichest it with the river of God, which is full of water. Thou preparedst them corn when thou hast so provided for it. Thou waterest the ridges thereof abundantly. Thou settlest the furrows thereof. Thou makest it soft with showers. Thou blessest the springing thereof. Thou crownest the year with thy goodness, and thy paths drop fatness. They drop upon the pastures of the wilderness, and the little hills rejoice on every side. The pastures are clothed with flocks. The valleys also are covered over with corn. They shout for joy. They also sing. Now, as you read all of the Psalm 65, you realize this happens when salvation comes out of Zion. That is when God visits the earth, and that's this renewal. Speaking of even the rejoicing of the earth, the rejoicing of the land and its vegetation and even its animal life. Isaiah chapter 32, verses 13 to 15. Upon the land of my people shall come up thorns and briars, yea, upon all the houses of joy in the joyous city, because the palaces shall be forsaken, the multitude of the city shall be left, the forts and towers shall be dens forever, a joy of wild asses, a pasture of flocks. All right, so this part of the prophecy is a judgment about the desolation coming upon the earth. But notice in verse 15 it says, until the Spirit be poured upon us from on high, and the wilderness be a fruitful field, and the fruitful field be counted for a forest. Isaiah chapter 35, verses 6 and 7. Then shall the lame man leap as a hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert. And the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. In the habitations of dragons where each lay shall be grass with reeds and rushes. Isaiah 55, verses 12 to 13. For ye shall go out with joy, and be led forth with peace. The mountains and the hills shall break forth before you into singing, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands. Instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree. And it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off. And in other words, the curse upon the earth is going to be reversed. And when that curse is reversed and that earth is renewed, it will be for everlasting. Not only does the ground and the mountains and the seas and the trees and the grass and the blossoming of the rose in the desert and so on, but also the animal creation, the animal life upon the creation will be renewed. Isaiah chapter 11, verses 6 and 9, speaking about the time when that root of Jesse, that branch of David, when he rules upon the earth, when the government is upon his shoulders. Isaiah 11, 6 to 9 says, the wolf also shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed, their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. And the sucking child shall play on the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the cockatrice den. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. So we go from the enmity between the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman to the young child playing with what we know today to be a venomous and deadly snake, showing again the full reversal of that curse and the harmony that is restored and renewed among all the aspects of the creation. And that renewal of the earth will indeed include the plant and animal life. Even in Revelation 21 and 22, where we read about the new heavens and the new earth, we don't read a lot of description about the new heavens and new earth, but we do read about mountains and cities and rivers and trees and so on. So the story of the earth is the record of this planet God made to be inhabited by the world of life that He created. And though cursed and defiled because of man's sin, the earth will be gloriously renewed and exist eternally in perfect harmony with all life.